It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them... Yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Listen as I sing all about the king. You can hear him all the time on the Eagles sidelines. He looks nice in his fur coat. Nitwit, moron, and dope are his favorite quotes. He cheers the wins and he boos the losses. He interviews athletes and mob bosses. He's an all-time Philly guy, a graduate of Northeast High. You can't get enough of Howard Eskin on WIP. That's why he's got this podcast. So listen up, because he's ready to speak.
Welcome to another edition of the Howard Eskin podcast. Another edition, and there'll be another edition after this and an edition after that, but whatever. All right, we're talking a little football in this town and actually around the country. Talking Philadelphia Eagles football is not just a Philadelphia thing. It's everybody thing because of the way people are impressed with Carson Wentz, with the way the Eagles are playing. All right, this week we talked to former Super Bowl head coach of the Pittsburgh Steelers, Bill Cowher, who now works for CBS, watches the Eagles every Sunday, but was there at the Thursday night game. So we talked about the head coach. We talked about the quarterback. We talk about the development of the team, and we talk about the best teams or team in the NFL right now. So we'll listen to Bill Cowher, and then I'll have some more comments afterwards about some other things that are going on here in Philadelphia and about sports. All right, I'm here with, he's a former Eagle, he's a former head coach of a Super Bowl team, and he's still a broadcaster, and his name is Bill Cowher. Bill, thanks for joining us. But I don't know how many people, I remembered you, but I've been covering the team for a long time. I don't know how many people remembered you were an Eagle. Before we get into this Eagles, what do you remember about your days with the Eagles?
Oh, you know, it was almost twofold. I remember that my very first training camp was in 1979. I came out as an undrafted free agent and signed with the Philadelphia Eagles. And actually, it was Dick Vermeil's. He was the head coach at the time, and I made it to the last cut. Al Chesley was kept. I was released. I went back down to NC State, got in school, and ended up signing with the Cleveland Browns the following year. Carl Peterson had given me an endorsement to Sam Ritigliano, and I ended up making a team. And then 3 years later, I was in 1983. I was actually traded back to the Eagles. Marion Campbell was a coach at the time, and really I played 2 years. And after my last year, actually, I was a special teams captain going into the season. Actually, got hurt in the fourth game, but Philadelphia was a place again. I started, went back to, and always a very dear part of my life because it was great memories, and my couple best years were right there in Philadelphia.
You know, when you think about it, back the NFL's hiring young coaches now, whether they're assistants and young head coaches. But you became an assistant coach in the NFL at 28 years old. That was pretty young back at that time. Where did you always know that when you were done playing, you wanted to become a coach?
Well, you know what? When I did get cut from Philadelphia in 79, I went back down and got back in school and became a GA. My last semester, I was a grad assistant on the Bo Ryan staff, and you know, I helped coach the linebackers. So it was kind of my first indoctrination into coaching, and I really enjoyed it. And then, you know, when Marty Schottenheimer took over midway through the 84 season, I was hurt injured reserve, and I was just rehabbing at the Eagles facility. And he called one enough, I wanted to get into coaching. And really, at the time, I thought, you know, maybe I should. This is the third knee injury I've had. I looked at the schedule the following year. Then most of the games were being played on turf. And he said, you know, come on back. I want you to coach special teams. So I actually ended up going back into Frank Gantz, who was our special teams coach at the time in 1984, I used to go in the back of his meetings and just took all these notes. And so I just thought he was a remarkable coach. As it turns out, he ended up, you know, coaching for many years as a head coach in the Kansas City Chiefs. But just one of the, I think one of the most dynamic special teams coaches there was in the league. And I was able to kind of go back and learn from him. And then went on to my own career as a special teams coach with the Browns and, you know, moved my way up to defensive back coach, then the coordinator, then obviously the head coach. So it, I was fortunate to be able to start at the professional level, no doubt. Marty Schottenheimer gave me a chance, and I was blessed to been able to take the advantage of the opportunity he gave me.
You know, when you become a head coach, and Doug Peterson has, you know what Philadelphia's like. It's probably worse now. When I say worse, I don't even know how to describe worse when it comes to the media. The scrutiny that you go through. You've watched Doug Peterson. You've watched the Eagles. What do you think of Doug Peterson as a head coach? And it's less than 2 years as a head coach. What do you think of Doug?
Yeah, you know, and it's interesting, Howard. You know, we have done the Thursday night games with CBS, and I was able to get down there and sit in a meeting with Tony Romo and Jim Nantz as they were preparing for the Carolina game, where I actually saw you on the sideline there. Right. But you know, it was just to sit in there and watch Doug and listen to his background. It's ironic because it felt very similar to some degree from the standpoint of, you know, he was like me. I mean, we both played in the league. None of us with any kind of, we were kind of backup players. I played for a couple different coaches. I think what he's done is he's come into this league and he's come into this team. And I think the best thing he did, which was the best thing I thought I did, was when I first became head coach, was my most important hire as a defensive coordinator was the offensive other side of the ball. And I hired Ron Earhart, who at the time was coming off of Super Bowl as an offensive coordinator with the New York Giants, and our philosophies meshed. And I think, you know, when he hired Jim Schwartz, I think it's just a great combination of taking care of your side of the ball and putting a man in charge on the other side of the ball who's very, very good at what he does. And I just think those two just work so well together. I just think that's a great combination right there. While he can develop, you know, a young quarterback in Carson Wentz, Jim's going to take care of the defense. It reminds me a lot, really, of what's taking place out with the Los Angeles Rams. You know, Sean McVay, who was the first hire he had, was Wade Phillips. Why? Because he wants to develop his young quarterback, you know, Jared Goff. So I see these two teams, like, very similar from the standpoint of the dynamic that exists on the coaching staff and the fact that they both have young quarterbacks and they're trying to develop an offense. So I like Doug. I think he's got a great demeanor, great feel for the game. And I think the players have a great respect for him.
You know, it's interesting that, Bill, I guess you were a tough guy, but you were kind of one of those guys. I don't know how to describe it, but I've seen coaches that have the discipline, yet the players don't dislike them for their discipline. They rally around them. What does it take for a coach? And obviously, you did something right with the Pittsburgh Steelers when you were the head coach there. What does it take for Doug, and I think he's already done that, but what did it take for that to happen?
You know what? I think the fact that he, you know, there's a lot to be said for having sat in that chair, you know, the chair of a player. Doug was a player. He understands it. He doesn't talk down to him. He talks to them as men. You know, you have people in that room that are, you know, they're 21, 22 years old, out of college, money in their pocket, free time. You have other people in that room that are 29, 30, have two or three kids at home, their fathers. So there's a really, really different dynamic that exists throughout that room. But this one thing that you have to have in common with them is that understanding that, you know, we're all in this together. And I've been there. He's been there with the young, with the old. There's experience. There's youth. You know, I think that they respect him because I think he understands what they're going through. And I think they feel like they can talk to him. And, you know, and they have great respect for him because he prepares. I think the one thing that I found with him and just talking with him a very short period of time, he's very knowledgeable of the game. He seems like a guy who's got great preparation. That's very important. And so, you know, I think players respect that. I think he's got structure there. He's got direction. I think he holds people accountable. You know, all the things it takes, I think, to build trust, because I think that's the one thing that takes time. You know, you don't automatically have that when you walk into a building or into a room. But I think Doug has quickly built that, and I think it's a lot of it has to do with the people he has surrounded himself with. We talked about Jim Schwartz on one side of the ball. I think Frank Reich on the other side of the ball also is an extension of him. So, you know, I always said you're only as good as the people you surround yourself with. I think the one thing you're seeing with Doug, he's a great judge of character, a good judge of people, and I think what he's done is surround himself with people that think like him.
You know, how much of the development do you think of Carson Wentz, and we'll get into how good he's playing right now, is because Doug's a quarterback, Frank Reich was a quarterback, and John DeFilippo, the quarterback coach, was a quarterback. And I know you were on the defensive side of the ball, but obviously you had somebody to develop Roethlisberger when you were with the Steelers. But what is it, how important was it that you have those people with the development of a young quarterback like Carson Wentz?
Well, it is important. Now, again, when you got people that have played that position, like, you know, like you talked about, you know, Frank played the position at a long time in the league. Doug played that position at a long time in the league. You know, I think when you first come into the National Football League, you know, it can get overwhelming because, you know, the preparation is immense. You're in there twice as long as you ever were in college. There's so many idiosyncrasies of offenses. There's so many different things you're seeing week in and week out. And I think when you have people that have been there before that can understand how much you can give a player, how much are they ready to accept, how much more do they want, and can they really, you know, can they really process? So I think the one thing that when you sit there and talk to Carson Wentz, this is a very smart guy. This is a very guy that can take in a lot. And I think what you're seeing is them giving him a little bit more and more as, you know, as not only that he's comfortable, but they're comfortable giving with him too, giving to him. So, you know, again, every individual is different. I think the most important thing that good coaches do is they don't overwhelm a player. They make sure that they don't get to the point where they dilute too much information to someone, where they're thinking too much and they're not just playing. I'm trying to keep the game simple, trying to keep the game fast in terms of processing things. So, and with that, it's like a teacher. You know, some students gather can take in more than others can. So I think the good coaches understand where those lines are, that they can keep developing a player, but at the same time, not letting them get away from being comfortable, because you want them to be comfortable and confident. And then you just keep giving them a little bit more. And as they get in there longer, they have a better understanding of the offense and better understanding of the people around them. Now, I think that's what you're seeing with Carson Wentz. I mean, he's developed this knack with Zach Ertz. I mean, him and him, when you see him talking, that's his guy. I mean, that's who he wants to go to. And, you know, so you're seeing that. And all of a sudden, Jeremy Maclin started to step up. And so it's just Alshon Jeffries is starting to step up. You see Nelson Aguilar in the slot. All of a sudden, they find a little place for him right now. So it's just, it's kind of fun to watch this offense evolve, behind a quarterback who understands what he has around him.
You know, Bill, when you had your production meeting, when the Eagles were in Carolina, all you guys get together, Nance and Romo and your whole crew, yourself, your whole crew, get around him. And Carson was one of the guys that comes in there. And I know Romo started throwing a lot of technical stuff at him. I wasn't in there, but I talked to Carson about it. But what did you notice about Carson Wentz as a person? And again, it's a short sample, but obviously you get a feel for him when he was in the production meeting with you guys.
Well, I don't. It's not too big for him. You know, I think that's the biggest thing you come away with. I think he's very confident. You know, he's talking about, like I said, he's talking about the relationship he has with Zach Ertz. You know, that's his guy, and you know, he knows who to go to, and you know, when he needs something and needs to make a play, and you know, and at the same time understands what he can and can't do. He's got input into the offense. But I'll tell you, the other thing you come away with is, you talk to people like Malcolm Jenkins, and all of a sudden he comes in there, and you ask him about Carson Wentz, and he just says the guy's a leader. He's unflappable, and he's only going to get better. And you know, and those type of endorsements that come from players who, you know, from the other players, speak volumes. You know, it's one thing to project something; it's another thing to hear other people talking about. And I think when you hear other teammates talking about it, and you realize this guy's got some pretty special qualities about his leadership ability and just how he handles himself, like you said, in terms of pressure and expectation. And I think it's he clearly has an impact on that football team with a lot of the people around them, even defensive players.
You know, you saw them in person, but better than anything, you get to watch the Eagles every Sunday when you're in the CBS studios and you're doing the pre and the post and the half and all the stuff that you do with CBS on Sundays. But what have you noticed? And I know you can't watch him every second, but when you watch Carson Wentz, what is the thing that impresses you the most about him as a quarterback?
Probably seeing the field. The thing I'm liking about him now is just his decision making. I think he understands, you know, where he's at, and you know, not making the mistakes, not throwing the interceptions. You know, even at times it's okay to throw the ball away. It's okay for a punt periodically to take place. Protecting the ball, particularly you get down into the red zone and, you know, in near the goal line, you know, the decision-making that he has. So you see him process the thing. I see him working from one side of the field to the other. I see him be able to take a check down. Those are the things that, you know, you love to see quarterbacks do is, you know, if you watch Tom Brady, you know, what does he do? Well, he's not afraid to hit the ball in a check down because that will open up some windows down the field later. You don't have to always throw the ball down the field, you know, on every play to get a first down. So I just like the way he's processing things, his resourcefulness, and more so his decision-making that he's had, particularly this year.
When you watch the Eagles as a team outside of Carson Wentz, do you notice something? This team I thought was going to be good. I didn't know that they were going to be this good, but they are this good. Have you noticed something about the team, and what is it that makes them this good?
Well, certainly on offense, you see the fact that they are able to find a place for Nelson Aguilar. They got mm-hmm. they got their slot receiver. I think that was one of the best things they could do, put Jeffrey and Torrey Smith outside. And, you know, and I love, you know, Clement and LeGarrette Blount, and, you know, they've got a lot of things in place. And you hated to see Jason Peters go down, but you know, I think Petite is going to be fine there. It just, you worry about depth at that position. To be quite honest with you, I think it's the only concern you would have going forward. Mm-hmm. And they're, like I said, they're a very good offense. So I got to tell you, I think the most impressive thing when I watch them is the fact that they have about seven people on that defensive front that they rotate in there, and they just bring it. I mean, I love Jim Schwartz's style of defense right now. You know, they'll play the run on the way to the quarterback. And when you have an offense that scores points, it's not a bad mentality to have. Fletcher Cox, Jernigan, those guys are just so disruptive on the inside. You know, they've got, again, all the people that can come off the edges that they have. And, again, the biggest thing is they have about seven people they rotate in there, and they're always fresh. Great sort of set of linebackers. I think losing Hicks is, you know, it was tough because he was a kind of a cog in there in the middle. There's no linebacker. But, you know what, they've got depth there. I love the way Jim Schwartz calls the game. Getting some of the corners back. Darby played this week, or he's going to play soon. And that's going to be a big help. So, you know, I think they got depth. I love their style on defense. And I think he's, again, with what they do defensively, it's a great complement to the offense that's being run by Doug.
You know, everybody likes to make comparisons. And Doug throws some names out there when he talks about Carson Wentz. I don't know that it's fair when the guy's in his second year. But everybody wants to kind of look at, well, what is it about this guy and who do you compare him to? Are there any comparisons between a young Ben Roethlisberger and a young Carson Wentz?
Yeah, I mean, I think when you first see him, there is. I mean, Carson, I think, is he's not. Ben was a bigger guy, the same size, but that he was a bigger guy at the mm-hmm. time. Carson could develop into that, but you know, you still see their demeanor, their size, the way that you see them get their shoulders, you know, parallel to the line of scrimmage before they're thrown to the ball to the left. They can throw left. They can throw right. They're very athletic for big guys. So they're guys that can move in the pocket. They can move out of the pocket. So you absolutely see those type of same attributes that you saw with Ben early on. And again, I think it's a constant growth. It's about being in a, you know, in a system that allows him to, you know, just to feel comfortable and to continue to grow. The one good thing about Ben is he was in the same system for a long time. And, you know, there's a lot to be said for that. There's a lot to be said for continuity. There's a lot to be said for, you know, again, being able to have to learn something, but then to know it, you know, to know what everybody else is supposed to be doing. The first year you learn it, the second year you kind of know it. And so I think that's, you know, that's where he's at, and you do see some of the similarities. And it is off, yes, it's early, but I tell you, you know, there's nothing that you don't see about him that doesn't think that this is going to be a special player for years to come.
You know, when you were the coach of Pittsburgh and Roethlisberger, I mean, the coach and the quarterback, they don't always agree on everything, but they talk about it and they say, all right, well, this is good or that is good. I know Carson Wentz and Doug do that. Was that important for you when you were the head coach for Ben Roethlisberger, and how important is that for Carson Wentz? You know, the coach and the quarterback have to be on the same page 99% of the time.
Yeah, they do, and it's a lot of the same responsibilities. And you know, like I said, you know, with the head coach and the quarterback probably get too much credit when they win and get too much blame when they lose. I mean, that kind of goes with the position. Right. So if you understand that going in, then, you know, you have to keep that even keel about you. I mean, the quarterback's the guy. He's going to get in that huddle, and, you know, we can do this. I mean, they're all looking at him, just like the head coach is being looked at when he stands up in front of the room. So there are a lot of the same things that take place. And you want that guy, you want him to feel empowered. You want him to feel a sense of that this is his team. And I think the head coach and that quarterback, there's got to be dialogue that exists there that, you know, that he's comfortable, and he's got feedback and input, and you're giving him the feedback he needs. So, you know, there's going to be a relationship that exists with those two people because of that whole dynamic, because of who they are, the responsibilities they have, and really how important one is to the other in terms of, you know, him being able to step in that other way and being felt like he's been empowered to be able to do certain things. And at the same time, as a head coach, you know, it's your responsibility that you're overseeing everybody. So, he understands you. You have to understand him. And through the course of that, there's sometimes disagreements, and sometimes you don't see things the same way. And that's all. You know what? And that's not that bad. Sometimes it's okay to get uncomfortable. And I think sometimes when you have that understanding, that you know you're going to get pushed. He's going to do things that you're not. You know, you may have to pull back some of that empowerment that you give him. Sometimes you have to reel it back in because you know what? That's just your job as a head coach. So it's give and take. It's like any relationship. Those good times will be challenging times as well. But I think when you kind of can start that at the beginning, as these guys are going through, it'll be a foundation that can carry them for many, many years to come.
Bill, I tell you, I'm at practice every day, and I watch these guys in the locker room. And the one thing that I take away from this team that maybe wasn't 100% with other teams, I can't find a jerk. You know, not that I look for, you know what I'm saying? As a head coach, you know how important that is. And really, when you think about that, how important, when you get into tough times, is to have guys that are always there for each other and have each other's back and not there for themselves. And I think of Martavius Bryant. Obviously, he's worried about his own numbers, and the Steelers now have an issue with him. But how important is it to have everybody together and have each other's back?
Well, it is. And again, that is ongoing as well. You know, you're always going to have situations that come up where, you know, as we've dealt with this whole season, right, with all the national anthem situations that have come up and how each team has had to handle that, how certain players have had to handle that. So, you know, it's been very challenging on so many levels, I think, from that standpoint. But certainly the one thing that you'd like to have is a team that is united. In process, you know, the process of preparation, the process of applying a game plan, the process of being able to evaluate and being accountable. And I think when you have good people, and it's really a reflection of the fact that the coaches have a good pulse for what's going on with their football teams. And it's not just the head coach, it's the assistants. It's a relationship that they have. The players are comfortable. The coaches have a good read on where each guy is. And at times when the head coach has to step in, he will step in. And so when you have like an open door and you see it. I mean, you'll know where there's one. You'll see when there's factions starting to be developed in one place or another, or where there's legitimate respect you can see and fun that these guys are having playing with each other. Now, winning helps that. Certainly winning is a big part of that. And you know, a lot of times it gets tested a little bit when you go through some adversity. But at the same time, that adversity can also make a lot of these things stronger, and they can strengthen through that too. So, again, I give a lot of credit to Doug. I do like the staff that he's put together. I say that, I know I've said this a multiple amount of times in this conversation, but I just think as a head coach, it's really, really important to have a good pulse for your assistants, because they're the ones that are working with the players directly, and the players directly are the ones that control that locker room.
You know, Bill, you brought up the national anthem, and I've talked to Boomer about it, and I guess you guys, during your time off the air, maybe have discussed it. Do you have an opinion on the situation the way it is now? Again, I know many people do. Some people don't want to talk about it, but do you have an opinion about that?
Well, I mean, I think everyone's discussed it. I mean, everyone's talked about it. I had the opinion that my opinion hasn't changed from the day that that our president kind of called the players out. And it was unfortunate that that situation took place. And as I said on that Sunday afternoon, after that Friday night comment by him, that, you know, you have to be very respectful where everybody's at. You know, I haven't walked in the shoes of a lot of people that's in that locker room. So, you know, I'd look at the thing, and if someone asked me to kneel for the national anthem, I said I wouldn't, because I see something different in that flag. But at the same time, if what you're feeling is something that's very dear to your heart, and it's a path that you went down that you feel very strongly about, I will put my hand on your shoulder. And I just think the most important thing is that we stay united throughout the whole thing, because you can be different yet still be united. And that's the thing, Howard, the message I would send as a head coach of a football team, as a father of a family, you know, is that, you know what, we're not all the same in a family.
Right.
But we're united. You know, and it's okay to be different, but still be united and still be one family. So I would encourage everyone to touch one way or the other, and the position you take is certainly one of yours, of your own, and I'm respectful of it. But I would not ask you to feel what I feel, and I would just try to influence you, and you do the same with me. You will not ask me to feel how you feel, and you may try to influence me. So I think that's what makes our country great, is that we can all live here and have different viewpoints, but you still be united in the fact that we recognize that we live in a great country. One that gives us great opportunity, freedoms that otherwise you wouldn't have anywhere else in the world. So I'm respectful of that, but I'm also respectful of the shoes and the paths that a lot of people have traveled that I was never a part of.
All right, a few more questions. And one, and this is a tough question because it's only halfway through the season. If you had a look in everybody every week, the rankings, all the other nonsense that we deal with, and the season's not over, but we still ask the questions. Who right now, in your opinion, is the best or the two best teams in the NFL?
Well, I would just say this. I look at it from the AFC standpoint. I think there's three teams that have kind of put themselves, in my opinion, with where they are, that are, I think, playing as good as anybody on any given day. Any one of these three teams can beat each other, and that would be New England, Pittsburgh, and Kansas City. If I had to look right now in the NFC, and I've talked about three teams that, to me, could beat each other on any given day, it's a little bit harder. I would say Philadelphia. I would say right now, the way the New Orleans Saints are playing, I think they're playing very, very well. I think the Minnesota Vikings have a defense that can play very well, and I think the Seattle Seahawks, because of their experience. So I think I think there's a lot of teams right there. I think injuries will play its part down the stretch, but certainly the Eagles right now, with the way they're playing, I think offensively, defensively, there's balance to football team as there is in the league. And I used to talk about New Orleans because, you know, you're talking about Drew Brees, who's thrown through for how many thousand yards, and they have a running game and a defense right now. Minnesota's got a very good defense, and Seattle is still Seattle.
The Eagles play them out there the first weekend.
I like those four teams.
Yeah, I think the Eagles – well, I know. The Eagles play them out there. I don't know if it's a CBS game. Play them out there the first weekend of December. It's the late game. Like normally, it would be a Fox game, but I don't know how they arrange that.
Yeah, we'll
get a pretty good idea. All right, the next question. Do you miss coaching a little bit? A little bit.
Oh, I miss coaching a lot. You miss game planning. I love strategizing. I love the game day adjustments that need to be made during the course of a game. And I love working with the players and coaches. I mean, there's no question. I mean, I'm so blessed to be able to do the Thursday night and get five games a year that I go to the stadium. I can go get there early. I can talk to the coaches and see some players and officials and just feel the whole game day atmosphere. And so you absolutely miss that. The only thing I just don't miss is the lifestyle it entails. You know, right now when the season's over, I have about 7 months where I get some time off and I'm able to do things that I never was able to do before. And quite frankly, that's what I love about what I have now. But during the season, you know, sitting back, enjoying what I have with the platform I have at CBS, but you do miss that. You'll never going to be able to replace that. But I got some great memories, and I get as close as I can, and particularly Thursday nights and each Sunday going in there with Boomer and Phil and Nate. So we have fun talking about it and have fun hanging around with guys who've played the game at a very high level, like those guys have. And so it fulfills that, it scratches that itch, I guess, so to speak.
You know what, I you pretty much answered the question, but the fun you have just shooting the you-know-what with the guys, whether it's on the air, whether it's off the air, especially on a Sunday afternoon, it seems like, and I know a few of the guys as well as yourself, it seems like it's got to be a lot of fun when you're still talking football and you're still having a good time. How much fun is that?
Oh, it's great, Howard. I mean, it really is. I mean, I'm going in there, and from the time I stepped down, I've been able to continue to take every Sunday. And whether I'm in the studio, most of the time we're in the studio on Sunday afternoons, we see every game unfold. And certainly you can't watch them all at the same time, but we have every game on. So, you know, there's certain times when a game gets close, we're watching those pivotal moments and giving our opinions on what should be done or should have been done, and bad call, good call. I'm calling into the NFL league office to find out what that interpretation was. So it really is fun. And we get to talk about it, you know, with these guys, like I said, with Nate, who's been in the league for such a long time, Boomer has, still has. It really is really, really enjoyable to be around guys you respect, guys you like, and we have a ball.
All right. Hey, Bill, I appreciate the time. It's fun talking football, and guy that was here with the Eagles and saw the difference in the teams then and the team now, and just obviously watching the pregame, all those shows you do, whether it's Thursday night or whether it's Sunday, and I really do appreciate it. Thanks.
Thanks. My pleasure, Howard. Anytime.
It's fun to talk to you. All right, Bill, take care. All right, very insightful, Bill Cowher, obviously the perspective of a head coach who had a young quarterback, as he had with Ben Roethlisberger, and Doug Peterson has with Carson Wentz. But just remember, Doug Peterson's important to Carson Wentz. So is Frank Wright. And so is the quarterback coach who works with him every day, John DeFilippo. And the development has really been good. Even when Carson Wentz doesn't have his best game, he still has a good game. And that's important for a quarterback. Important to not let the little things get him down. And Carson Wentz is not always happy with every throw, but he's made a lot of good throws. So it was nice to have Bill Cowher to talk about this football team. And it, as amazing as it may sound, and people don't want to hear Super Bowl, but I'll give you some numbers about a Super Bowl and the perspective of where the team's at and what it means to get off to this start. Now, they're off to a 7-1 start, but I have teams who have gotten off to a 6-1 start. Since 1990, 86 teams have gotten off to a 6-1 start. The Eagles are now 7-1. 77 of those teams made the playoffs. 27 of those teams went to the Super Bowl, and 14 of those teams won the Super Bowl. So obviously there's something about the way the Eagles got started. All right, let me talk about a couple other things. The 76ers and the Markelle Fultz situation. The Sixers never find a way to deal with injuries. Now, Markelle Fultz doesn't have any structural damage. From what I've been told, he's got no structural damage in his shoulder. However, there's something wrong when the player says it hurts. And it may be from practicing a lot between the end of the season and trying to become the first pick, and so many different things that have affected him. But he obviously has got soreness, and at the time of this recording, he's going to miss a few weeks. It is amazing that the Sixers just couldn't stop it from the beginning and just move forward, but nobody trusts them anymore when they talk about injuries, and that's a big problem. That is a big problem that the 76ers are going to have to overcome from here on. The other thing is, I don't think Markelle Fultz, when he plays, is a two-guard. He's a point guard. And I don't think he will be nearly as effective, and he's not the best player or the best pick in the draft or even the thought of that if he doesn't play the position that you really drafted him for, and that's the point guard. If the head coach wants Ben Simmons to be the point guard, that's fine. But just realize that Markelle Fultz isn't going to be the player that you drafted if he's not a point guard. So we'll see how that all plays out. The Phillies, and again at this taping, it hasn't become official, but Gabe Kapler will be the new manager, or is the new manager, depending on when you hear this, of the Phillies. I think this hiring is a joke. And the reason I think it's a joke is because all Matt Klentak and apparently Annie McPhail, who's the president, Klentak is the general manager, all they want is a guy that fit into analytics. And if you can have a guy that fits into analytics and sports science, oh, in their minds, they've hit a home run. I don't want a guy that just a manager or a personnel guy that just sits at a computer and can run a ball game. It seems like when you hire a manager now, and this is what they're doing, hiring a manager that is so into analytics and sports science, he just can sit in front of a computer to run a baseball game. I don't want that. That's not the world. Sometimes you watch a player and say, this guy can play or this guy can't play. Hey, you can use the numbers to determine what he needs to get better at. But this analytics, and I call it nonsense, it is total nonsense. To use as much as they use, to put so much into analytics, and that's what the Phillies are doing. And Matt Klentak hired a guy that he may have known before, but he certainly loves the fact that he loves analytics and he loves sports science. Sports science, by the way, is a joke. That's another joke. Sports science was supposed to cut down. This was what Chip Kelly started, and other people are doing it. I don't know if Chip Kelly started it for other people. It was supposed to cut down on soft tissue injuries. There are more soft tissue injuries in the NFL now than ever. There's nothing you can do to stop them, and sports science isn't going to change that. But get ready. You got a manager that loves a computer. You got a manager that wants organic foods, and to eat healthy is fine. But sports science is his whole thing. He's a former Major League Baseball player that obviously, when you look at some of the pictures on the internet, and I posted one on Twitter, that he kind of loves himself a little bit. Hey, that's one thing to like and respect what you do yourself. There's just something about him, and analytics is probably a big part of it. Sports science is another part of it. I just don't know what the hell that they are doing. I have no idea what they're doing. But for the fans' sake, I hope it's successful, and you hope the players are successful, but they have to do more things to get that right. All right, I got it out. I just wanted to get that off my chest, and I'll get it off during the week on WIP as well. I'll get it off my chest there as well. So hopefully you enjoyed Bill Cowher. We'll be back again next week. I got some ideas for a guest next week, but enjoy it. The Howard Eskin Podcast. That's what it is. You can find it on iTunes, The Howard Eskin Podcast on iTunes. And thanks for being a part of it this week.
Listen as I sing all about the king. You can hear him all the time on the Eagles sidelines. He looks nice in his fur coat. Nitwit, moron, and dope are his favorite quotes. He cheers the wins and he boos the losses. He interviews athletes and mob bosses. He's an all-time Philly guy, a graduate of Northeast High. You can't get enough of Howard Eskin on WIP. That's why he's got this podcast. So listen up, because he's ready to speak.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches.
Because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.